The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/TDI. And welcome to The Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is that special edition, the series that we're doing, the tete-a-tetes, discussions with some great people that we met up at the Benzinga FinTech Awards 2018 in New York just a couple of weeks ago. And we have two great conversations that we're going to bring to you. I want to mention that, you know, we had the opportunity to find a lot of the different players that were speaking and presenting. So we said, you know what, how about coming over and talking to us and telling about what you do, some of the programs that you have. So don't look at this as an advertisement or a particular, you know, testimonial about any of these. No, it's just a conversation to find out more about what is the actual things that they're doing, their insight into the technology of financial markets and financial technology, fintech. So we talked about a lot of different things with a lot of different people. What we're doing here is, this is part two, where we are having a discussion over a period of, I guess we're going to have probably about 12 different discussions that I'm going to bring to you. So we're going to be talking with Teresa Carey, who's a columnist and a financial technology writer. And we're also going to be talking with Andy O'Rourke from Direction Funds. So we're going to have all that coming up. Let's get to our first guest right now. All right, next up is Teresa Carey. Carey on investing.
Yes.
So Teresa's been how long you been in the whole area of, the world of investing and writing and journalism and all that?
The world of journalism I sort of tripped and fell into in 1990, courtesy of PC Magazine. So my first paid byline, actually my first byline ever, was in PC Magazine, and they paid me a lot of money for it. And I started evaluating accounting software for them, and then that segued into tax software and then into personal finance stuff. And I bought my first stock when I was 8.
Oh.
And so I've been in the investing world for a really long time.
Right.
And
like 22 years, that would be. If I calculate that right.
Thank you very much. I won't tell you about my daughter who's about to turn 30. So, that's my younger one.
We're going to, anyway, I think, have a little bit of a laugh what I'm about to tell you here.
Because okay.
I didn't know this, and you didn't know this, and I think I'm going to be right about this.
Let's see.
A very dear friend of mine, mm-hmm. John C. Dvorak.
Oh, John. I went to a lot of his parties at Comdex. They were good.
Yeah, we do a podcast every Tuesday night. Last night, we were live here. Been doing it for 8 years, he and I.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
I got to check that out, because he's hilarious.
Yeah,
he's
John so and I, funny. He does another one with Adam Curry now, as a matter of fact, on Thursdays and Sundays as well. But let's talk a little bit about, so you've been a big advocate for the retail investor for forever. And
basically.
Do you think things have been, you know, the way things have been changing with regard to technology and investing and what's been going on is really something good for the retail investor?
I do believe so. When I first came on the scene and started writing it was then called the Electronic Investor column, and then the name got changed about 5 years ago to the Digital Investor. It's like, whoa, rebranding. But anyway, at the beginning, I learned about some things that were going on with market makers and payment for order flow. And I was shocked. I sat there and listened to these stories and went, are you kidding me? And then I dug in really deep and I wrote a column, I believe it was in late 95, where the headline was something like, your free trades are costing you a lot of money. And that kind of, I started getting phone calls from the SEC, and they were saying, what are you talking about?
Oh,
what
gosh.
Is this?
Is that
and,
sad?
Yeah, and so that they didn't know about it until it blew my head off. And then I started writing about that. And so I was able to dig down and find out that because of the way some of the market makers were playing with the spread, that some of those free trades, if somebody was trading 500, 600 shares of stock, they were paying $50 for that free trade, maybe mm-hmm. more. And I really think a free trade's only worth it if you're trading tiny, tiny one or two shares, no round lots. Once you get to a round lot, you're giving away money.
So the thing is, there's no free lunch. I mean, the fact mm-hmm. of the matter is that we've seen that there is – There's a lot of apps, though, that are purporting to be free.
Purporting.
You got like Robinhood out there. How's that thing?
Well, Robinhood, if you dig into their statements where they talk about where they make money, they're making it all in payment for order flow. And they also have a really weird way of charging for margin where you pay upfront, basically.
It's like a credit card. When you take cash off your credit card, you pay from day one, it starts ticking.
Pay from day one. But in this, you pay in advance for the opportunity to use margin, whether you use it or not. So it's like you tell your credit card company, I'm going to use $1,000, and they start charging you for that on day one. And then the month goes by and you haven't used it. Too bad, you've paid for it.
So, you know, the problem is we live in a world that everybody believes things are free. And the fact is that everything has been based on that. You know, you look at a Facebook or a whatever it is, it's free. But there's sponsorships. So you got to be dealing with that stuff, which may or not be a big deal. Then you got the Robinhood, which is free, but it really may not be somehow. And there's something else going on.
If you're not paying, you're not the customer, you're the product.
You're the product.
And that's something that people on Facebook, I've kept in mind from day one on Facebook. On Twitter, I very occasionally, you know, push a tweet, especially when I'm doing my survey of traders and investors, which I used to do in advance. Well, I did for years in advance of my online brokerage reviews in Barron's, which my 23rd ran in March. And then after that, my column was retired. So I'm not sure what's going to happen to that going forward, but I'm hoping to continue to write that review. And there is a lot of interest in people. I'm being courted, we'll put it that way. It's
lovely.
It's lovely. I'm so old to be getting courted, and I love that. So it's actually been kind of a fun time.
That's great. Steak and wine dinners, here we come.
That's right.
So, you know, it's interesting because I've been, and I'll be honest with you, so people that know me and listen to me, especially on DH Club, I kind of slam Barron's all the time, and in the way that love the magazine, love the writing, okay? But I'm always like, that cover page, that cover article always gets me a little weirded out. Not all the time. I mean, there's certain ones. That's not just that paper. It's a lot of other papers, too. But what I was going to mention was that what's really fascinating is that, you know, over the years, Barron's was the Bible for the weekly buy. We went to the library because we're too cheap to buy it back in the day. Mm-hmm. Go to the library on the weekend, you just kind of like got a pad, you got a pen, and you start writing and reading and writing and reading. I mean, Alan Abelson, by the way.
Oh, Alan, he was so dark. Oh, what a guy.
Great.
And his
Only Marr in his whole entire career, I think, was his hatred for Amazon.
Right.
I mean, that's it.
Well, part of it is, I mean, Alan is this darling, dapper gentleman who I was able to meet a few times. And he'd meet me and he'd shake my hand and he'd go, Teresa, I have no idea what your column is about. Because it was about technology. Right. And then his assistant, his admin, pulled me aside and said, you know, he dictates his column to me.
Yeah.
He doesn't use a typewriter or a computer. And so she was really the one who polished it and turned it into, shouldn't be saying that, but she was fantastic. And
well,
she
I gotta
just
tell you
retired
something.
A few years ago.
I don't care what he wrote. It really wasn't the substance of what he wrote. It was just the eloquence of his writing.
And a lot of that came right out of his mouth.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
And I'm enjoying reading his successor, Randy Forsythe.
Right, Randy Forsythe.
Who was my editor for 5 or 6 years, and I learned
Didn't he write
a
the electronic trader or something like that?
No, he was the editor. So
the
when
editor
the,
of that,
it's
yeah.
really funny, when the Electronic Investor first came out, the guy who originated it, named Howard Gold, and he's with
the Money Show.
He's working with them now. But he fought so hard to get that page in the magazine, and it took him a couple years. And it wasn't until he found me that he was able to get it in going. But he had a banner on it that said "The Electronic Investor," edited by Howard R. Gold. And then way down further, it was written by Teresa W. Carey. And so people thought it was Howard's column for a long time. And then when Randy became the editor, that they just pulled Howard's name off and put Randall W. Forsythe in there. And then he looked at that and went, that's dumb. And finally said, Teresa, you're doing the work on this. And so his name came off the top after about 2 years.
I mean, some great names. You got Mike Santoli.
Oh, Mike.
Who was on my show back in 08. We had a big tiff. Big tiff back then. I was saying unemployment's going through the roof, and he was, you're an idiot. You know what I'm talking about. We went back and forth.
That would have been fun.
But no. My point is, though, and I'm digging a little bit on a few of these things, and I mentioned something, but there's a reason why I'm getting there. I love the stuff, where the work. Let's just stay that. I want to talk about the whole the way that headlines and headlines and front pages. That's why I mentioned the front page. So a lot of times I was Barron's, I take their front page, and a lot of times I find it to be a little bit like there's a silver lining thing. Okay, that's what I have found in my
head.
Okay, it's fine, whatever, that's great. But I really want to talk about the news has gotten down to the point of 12 words.
Right. And it's turned into clickbait.
Clickbait, that's all it is, right? I mean, and you got these companies like, who was one of the biggest ones with that? It was the Motley Fools.
Right.
You know, they write about the next stock that's going to be, you know, worth the 10,000X, whatever. Are we ever going to get back to substance?
Well, the next stock that's going to be worth 10,000X, I have never written that stuff, and I don't read it either.
Right.
So the gist of what I've always worked on, and I stayed away from investing recommendations. A lot of people do that. I think that's a commodity, frankly, and what I do is not. And what I tried to do was look at the landscape of apps, brokerages, websites. At the beginning, I was reviewing Box Software because that's what there was in the 1990s.
Oh, yeah.
And try and tell people, here are the tools you could use. This is the best way to use them. You could use it to generate these ideas for you. Hey, are you interested in trading options? Here's a product that has a lot of options trading ideas. And you can do paper trading and figure out what works for you. And through writing this column and through talking to all the people in the industry, I turned into an options trader. I'd say that's more than half of my trades now are options.
Right.
And I also am maintaining the accounts for several of my elderly relatives to keep generating income for them. And in the last few years, with no interest to speak of, I mean, everybody's bonds matured and I didn't put them in any other bonds, I've been writing calls against their long positions.
Yep.
And finding the lucrative out of the money calls, and thank you, I'll take your money and then I'll keep it and I'll keep my stock and I'll write another call.
Right. I've been working 9 times out of 10, I bet.
Oh yeah. Very seldom do I get hit.
Right,
And when I do, I go, oh hey, that was actually a good exit price. I'm fine with that. So I've also been using covered calls on the off chance that I buy stock long, which has been getting, or an ETF long. I only buy ETFs that are optionable.
Mm.
And I
right
open
to call
the position as a covered call.
Yeah, go 7% over the top on the call.
Boom,
the call.
Right there. Done. Yeah, I just reduced my cost basis and kept a little money in my pocket for the next trade. So, and I have to thank all the people who've educated me over the years for doing that. And I look back at, you know, when I started trading options and the growth in my personal, I've been doing most of my options trading in my retirement accounts. They look awesome.
Yeah.
last month when, Barron's told me they were retiring my column, I pulled up my retirement accounts and went, I could retire, but I don't want to.
Right.
So
all of those that are courting her, you need to up the ante here because she doesn't need the job.
Don't need it.
Yep.
But I like doing it.
So what do you see about the future here? So now we have apps. One of the things I talked about with one of the people here at the Benzinga FinTech Awards, the Global FinTech Awards, is that more and more people are using mobile apps.
Right.
Now, let me just kind of give that just a touch of a backdrop for a second, because this is a provider who has some very sophisticated charting and technical analysis programs, known for that. And we went into this whole discussion about, you know, the amount of, over the last, I don't know, a couple of years, let's say, the amount of people that are going on the mobile app, which is a very small amount of real estate.
Right, tiny.
And they're pushing a button, which is probably 20% of the real estate is the button to push. So there's no room for really any technical analysis, no really any room for anything more than just looking at price, maybe a couple of charts here and all that. It seems to me that maybe I'm the one that has made it too complicated over the years to understand all this. I don't know. But just kind of simply pushing a button, if you're buying and holding forever, who cares if you miss 10 cents or even a half a dollar? I don't care, whatever it is. But does that seem like that's going to be the next level of trading?
Well, if you look at markets like Asia and a lot of Europe, especially Eastern Europe, those guys only trade on mobile apps. They don't have stuff hardwired into their homes.
Right.
I've been talking to the brokers over the years and watching the development of mobile trading. And I wrote a column. I went back and looked at some of my really early work, and I wrote something. I remember writing it from a campsite up in the Sierras one summer, and it was about satellite. I mean, this was pre-Wi-Fi. It was the mid-90s. How much it cost to put up a satellite transmitter to get data to your maybe notebook if you were out trading in the wild places. How expensive it was.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And now, and then we moved to Japan for 2.5 years. So I lived in Japan 1997 through the end of 99. And the mobile phones we got over there were amazing. People were shopping on them.
This company just raised over $160 million. eToro will be on stage momentarily. The company that just raised over $160 million, eToro, will be on stage momentarily.
That changes my life.
All right, here you go.
Anyway, companies were shopping. People were shopping.
Let's start again. Let's take a quick break. And I want you to start with, I lived in Japan from 97 to 99.
Okay. So I lived in Japan from the middle of 97 to the end of 99. And the cell phones there were pretty amazing. People were using them for shopping, maps. They weren't the Apple, the iPhone style or the Samsung smartphone style. They were flip phones, but they had a really big screen, like 3 inches by an inch and a half or something. And you could use them for reasonable things. And my kids even had cell phones. So the screen that we had on our phones was about 3 inches by an inch and a half. And you could do real things with that. And we looked up, they had train schedules on that we could look up on
Nobody
our
would talk on them. They would be just...
Yeah, there was a lot of looking at them, especially on the trains. People were looking at them and texting. Right. So my older daughter was in junior high then. She got really good at texting. And then we get back to California, and we get her a flip phone, and she's like, Mom, I can't do anything with this. She was very disappointed. And so the phones we were using in Japan and the data that was available was way ahead. I mean, it was 2007 or 8 before the U.S. Wow. caught up to what we'd been doing 10 years before. It was really interesting. So that's why I think... And the other thing that was happening over there, it was expensive to install a phone line or an ISDN at the time. That was the big deal.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, ISDN. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In your, or, you know, cable, anything. Very expensive. And you had to pay cash because it was a very cash-based society. And so anyway, people would just buy a cell phone on the street from some vendor and use that for everything. Bank transfers, trading, whatever. And I found that intriguing, and so it doesn't surprise me that all of these brokers who operate in Asia and Europe are mobile first, and the U.S.-based brokers are caught up to that late, like I'd say 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you coming aboard, and I wish you the best of luck. You're going to get picked up very quickly by all those suitors and quarters out there.
It's going to be wonderful.
It's going to be great.
I have to fan my face.
We'll get you back for a full-length podcast one of these days.
That'd
Thanks
be
so
great.
Much, Reza.
I'll be around.
It. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Really nice to chat with you.
We'll have to wait to see what happens and where she goes with her writing, because her writing was always really good. But, you know, I want to talk to you about something for a second. Before we get to our next guest, I want you to listen to this because this is important. I'm not kidding here either. I did some research. I found out about a way. Now, hold on to your hats. A way to save you money on your life insurance. Some of you bike and run and do marathons and swim. Work out, keep yourself healthy, right? Well, one of the things to know is that statistically, you have the opportunity to live a longer life and a healthier life. And as such, you have the opportunity to save a lot of money on your insurance, on your life insurance. What's really cool is you can go over to healthiq.com/TDI. And when you go there, you can take a quiz. You can find out exactly what's going on there. There's a lot of things you can do, but Health IQ uses this scientific and information related to the data about your health to secure the lowest rates in life insurance for health conscious people. Yeah, runners, cyclists, vegans. You know that 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance? And these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. And they can do this because, as I said, that physically active people have more than a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, 56% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. So like you're saving money on your car insurance, if you're in good health, like being a good driver, if you're in good health, well, you could save some money on your life insurance. Why not? I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? So all you have to do is simply go find out more. Do me a favor. I really want you to do this because if you have the opportunity to save some money, why not do it? Go to healthiq.com/TDI. There's a lot of information on there. There's information on exactly what's going on, the opportunities for you. And you can find out if you could save yourself a chunk of money. You're working out, you're doing all this work, you're dieting, you're healthy, you're fit. Why not get more benefit? Now a financial benefit, saving money on your life insurance. Healthiq.com/TDI. And next up is Andy O'Rourke. He's the Chief Marketing Officer for Direction, which is sounds like Direxion, but it is Direxion, right?
That's right.
All right. So he's CMO, and we're going to talk a little bit about leveraged funds. So you guys are one of the first in, I mean, there's only a few families out there that really have anything solid in terms of leveraged, you know, the two times, three times. So give us a quick education, because I've tried many times to explain to my listeners about what is a leveraged fund, what to do, who's it for, and who's it not for?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. We spend a lot of time trying to educate people on the impacts of leverage. So what we're most known for are higher leverage point products, 2x, 200%, 300% exposure to various indexes. And it definitely is a product that is meant for people who are actively trading. So they're monitoring the markets very closely. They're watching different signals. They have a premise or a strategy that they want to implement for the short term. And right. Our products are ideal for that.
Right. So the problem comes in, and I don't mean to keep harping on the products, but I think it's important to kind of state this, right? So the problem sometimes is the degradation of performance and of the core principle, potentially, with a long-term hold on the higher leverage products. Am I saying that correctly?
You are. You're sort of ignoring the other side of it, but we'll get to that in a second.
Right. I agree. I agree. No, I agree. I understand that.
But yes, the point is the fact that a general rule of thumb that we get people to try to understand is that the trend is your friend. So when markets are trending and are relatively low periods of volatility, the products will actually compound in your favor, and they'll help you actually both on the upside and the downside,
right,
which is, you know, probably a story for another day. But during periods of higher volatility, with the products resetting every day, you can actually see some degradation, and you just that you won't necessarily see the funds over a period longer than a day return their multiple of what the index has done for that same period of time.
Right. So you just got to be aware that, listen, it's like anything else, right? Just know your product. Know what you're dealing with. If you don't understand it, first of all, don't trade it. I don't care what it's called, what looks like, if you don't understand what you're dealing with, you shouldn't probably be, working on this. But so I know you also have a new setup or a new launch of a semi-leveraged product
line?
Yeah,
I mean, we refer to them as lightly leveraged ETFs.
I like that.
But
leverage light.
Obviously, what we mean is as compared to the higher leverage points. But just applying, that's why I say we spend a lot of time talking about leverage and how it can be used. So a lot of people use leverage in their day-to-day life and don't think a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a vehicle with an investment, you can use leverage to get yourself just a little bit more exposure. If you believe that you are going to see some positive returns in a given asset class or sector, you can leverage that up a little bit. At these levels that we're talking about, 125%, it's something obviously we've studied very closely for a lot of years now. It's actually something you can hold in your portfolio.
But is it entirely synthetic?
No, actually not.
There's a difference in the components.
Yeah, so we're talking in the case of we've branded them separately, so we call them the Portfolio Plus ETFs. They're all bull funds, so they're not going in the inverse direction at all. They're just meant for buy and hold long-term portfolio tools. So the buckets will be made up, the product will be made up of 98 to 100% of the equities in the index that they're tracking. And then they're going to be trading either futures or swaps to get extra exposure.
The extra bump.
The extra top.
It's like getting a really good, let's call it a mojito. Like a good margarita with a floater on
with
top.
A floater.
Right? That's what this is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the idea is that, look, if people have for years and years now have been building portfolios that equal to 100%.
Right.
So why can there not be the concept of a portfolio that might equal 105%, 110%, 115% that can still do good things and outperform over time?
So let's kind of just switch gears here for a second, okay? So technology, right? So this is what we're here. We're here for the FinTech conference and awards. And technology has obviously made it a lot easier for people to trade much quicker and all that. Do you find like a lot of algos are hitting your stuff because of the leveraging component?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's true. We see definitely a lot of people who are kind of in that high frequency world. But for sure, we see people who are using the products are very, very technical. So they are using a ton of the tools that are here at the conference today to analyze. I mean, essentially, those that are really good at using our products are mostly tracking. They're less concerned with the fundamentals and more concerned with the technicals of where is that price point? When's it going to hit a floor or a ceiling? When's it going to be a trigger point? And all these technologies that we're seeing here today, I mean, there's a ton of them that are helping them analyze that.
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that I help try to bring to the surface a lot of times when it comes to trading these leverage funds is that the technicals that you want to use, in my opinion, so let's just take, I don't care what fund it is, it doesn't matter, the ABC triple leveraged fund, okay? So when you're using technicals, whether you're using, let's say, moving averages, you're using some kind of MACD crossover stochastics, you're using some kind of unbalanced volume, I don't care what it is. I don't care what you're using. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care if it works. It doesn't work. Not the point. Point is that you want to be using it on the core ABC, right? I don't want to do it on the leverage fund because we don't know exactly if the leverage fund is leaking at all or doing better and not giving us the underlying same exact performance over time. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. It's just a fact. So when I do my technical analysis on whatever that base is, so if I'm doing gold or if I'm doing the S&P, or I'm doing NASDAQ, I'm always doing it on the base index or the base, whatever it's based on. And then I go, and if it's a thumbs up, let's do this trade, then we'll go to the leveraged and hit the leveraged trade. Comments?
You know what? I agree with you. I say that probably a bit controversially because there are probably many of our customers who maybe don't. Because they look at whether it's a leverage product or whether it's an ETF or whether it's an index itself, it's a thing that has a price that moves.
Right.
And they can analyze that price and the movements of them. However, inherent within the leverage products are of those daily reset components that we talked about earlier. To really be a little more predictive of them, you need to understand the impact of those and how it gets higher when volatility is higher and mm-hmm. lower when trends are lower. So all I'm saying is that I am agreeing with you in the sense that it becomes a little more complicated to track as opposed to tracking the base thing, the ABC in your example.
Right.
So I tend to agree with you, but there are plenty of people out there that there are options on triple leverage ETFs.
Yep.
Quite a bit of them.
Those are fun.
Yeah.
Those are a lot of fun, actually.
Leverage on leverage.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Andy O'Rourke, CMO of Direction Funds. Appreciate you sitting down with us today at the Benzinga Awards.
All right. Great. Great to be here. Thank you.
That's going to wrap it up and call an end to this second part of this series, the Tete-a-Tetes, we're calling it, with some of the folks from the Benzinga FinTech Awards that attended and talked about all sorts of areas of new technology, old technology, and cutting-edge technology. And we bring you a lot more in the next several days. Again, a little test. We're going to put them out throughout the week so you have smaller episodes, more listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned for the next one. And we're going to be having... Who are we having next? Let's see who we're having next. Looks like Anton Muzgovi from Human IQ, or Human IQ. And we're going to be having... Josh Burton. That's going to be kind of interesting. From a trading group. Then we have Tom Eck coming up after that, who is the head of IBM's Watson Division for Finance. Casey Ubris, CTO for Quicken Loans. Lots coming. Stay tuned. Stay with us. Make sure you get all of these by subscribing to the iTunes feed and anywhere else you can get your podcasts. Any questions? Of course, go over to Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Simply just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew, any questions that you have. Once we finish with all this, we have a lot of listener questions coming in. So in a couple of weeks, we'll get to all of those and all of yours. Thanks again for joining me. I'll see you soon.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.